Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. My name is Staff Sergeant Samuel Kroll with the North Dakota National Guard's Public Affairs Office. And today I have a special guest, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Murphy. How are you doing, sir?
Good, Sam. Thanks.
Fantastic. So right now you're assigned as the Director of Human Resources for the North Dakota National Guard. And you also are an M-Day Domestic Operations is what I know?
Or Deputy Director for our Dom Ops section. That's correct.
Deputy Director. Yep. Fantastic. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I'd like to first do the introduction. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? What you like?
So I grew up small town, North Dakota, Larimore, North Dakota.
Okay.
Best mascot in the state, polar bear.
All right.
enlisted into the North Dakota Army National Guard when I was 17, junior in high school. So as a split option guy.
Okay.
You know, funny story there. I joined one night. I went to pick up a buddy of mine, and his dad was forcing him to sit down and talk to the recruiter. And we couldn't go out to do anything until after. So I sat at the table, and by the end of the night, we both had committed, and we were heading down to Fargo. So that's how I ended up in uniform. That was, late 80s.
Okay.
So I've been wearing this uniform for quite some time.
Right on.
Spent a little time in the ADA. Mm-hmm. I've spent time in logistics units, a variety of different things. Like I said, my last full-time assignment was the J3, so
okay.
Domestic ops full-time.
Sure.
And then in January, I moved into human resource office.
Fantastic. And sir, you were enlisted before you went officer route. So
I was enlisted for 18 years.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And I was a direct commission.
Ah, gotcha. Yep. So a direct commission is basically you go right into OCS, or
no OCS,
how does that work?
No ROTC.
Oh, what the heck?
Yeah. You put a packet together.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at all your NCOERs. You get a bunch of letters of recommendation. And
sure.
You sit in front of a board. You interview. And you get the
you got
thumbs
it.
Up or thumbs down. Yeah, they must have been pretty desperate at that time because I got the thumbs up.
Oh, that's awesome. So take me back a little bit. So 1988, you enlisted as, you said, a ADA, right?
In the ADA.
ADA. So first a fire for all the ADA listeners out there. What was it like in 1988 joining the military? I mean, you, and I've even looking at your career here, you were actually the XO under recruiting and retention. What has, like, from being in for this amount of time, what has changed? And I mean, don't have to go over good and bad, but like, what's the difference then and now?
Yeah. So really, Sam, when I first joined, right, late 80s, mm-hmm. And then to today, right, I've gone through, that period of a strategic force versus an operational force, right? OIF, OEF. I spent some time in Kosovo. Midpoint of my career, or later, a little later than that, really when deployments kicked off, and that changed a lot. It changed a lot for the organization, and changed a lot for, opportunities in the organization.
Right.
And it's been great. And when I'm on, I don't want to do public math, but somewhere in the, three decades plus. So I've seen a lot and done a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been a great career.
Well, good. And I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with you. A couple of different times throughout my tour working at Troop Command, where you were the executive officer there. And then also when you were a little, I think I was a brand new E4. I don't know if you remember at all, but I was a brand new E4. We were at Assembly Middle School basketball game. And I had to say, like, oh, the North Dakota National Guard's been deployed a bunch of times. And it was like me and another crew. And I was the E4. I hadn't gone to basic training or anything, but I remember you as Major Murphy then. But you probably didn't know this young
I buck. Don't remember that, no. Yeah. But I don't remember a lot. Like I said, it's been a long career.
Well, and that's okay. And that's interesting you say that. So when you talk about time specifically, OIF, OEF, all of these deployments, it is a huge change of not culture but climate in the sense of, opportunities, et cetera. And you at HRO and then also having this time being in all these different units. I mean, ADA, 12 Charlie, you've been an engineer, you've been with the ADA, public affairs. So, mm-hmm. like, you've seen many, many different things and also have been a part of many, many changes. To kind of caveat onto that, what made you decide to go the officer route?
Yeah, so about year 16, 17 into my enlisted career,
sure.
I wanted to get into public relations.
Mm-hmm.
The equivalent to that in the Army is public affairs.
Right, right.
At that time, our public affairs officer was starting to get ready to retire.
Okay.
And, Mass Sergeant Keller
okay.
and Rob was getting ready to retire. and the organization wanted to put it or turn it back into a commissioned officer's position.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's what started me down the path of putting a pack together for a direct commission. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, eventually got the thumbs up. And that was my first full-time position, was the deputy public affairs officer working with Rob.
Okay.
And he retired about a year later. I became the public affairs officer, and I did that from 2005 to about 2011. And during that time frame, that was three deployments.
Wow.
And that was really when OIF and
right.
OIF and EF kicked off. Mm-hmm. And so organizationally, we were extremely busy. And then throw on top of that the flood of 9, the flood
right.
of 11, and a variety of other domestic responses that we did. It was extremely engaging and rewarding.
Yeah.
From you know, the foxhole of a public affairs mm-hmm. officer. I mean, I got to experience and do a lot of different things.
Right. And that's, if there's one thing that I know is how do a lot of younger soldiers that I've met are like, how does so-and-so do so well? Well, they've had a lot of exposure, right? And we talk about over time, you're going to learn and have mentors, good and bad. And sometimes you're going to get put in positions where, holy cow, what am I doing? Am I doing things right? And you're questioning all these things. And you have people around you like Rob Keller or just people in other offices, et cetera. So when you talk about that, I can't even imagine the amount of A, pressure, B, the amount of things you learned on the fly. But then also just the clarity of it all. After you're done with something, you're kind of just thinking to yourself, okay, I've done this. What could I have done better? And then come the next operation, like you're talking 09, 08, the floods and stuff, how that directly correlates. So,
yeah. And what I'll tell you is, you know, the Army helps you to become very resilient.
Oh, yeah.
They also, you know, help you and teach you to become confident.
Yep.
And really just you put your best foot forward every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get a little quicker, faster, stronger, smarter mm-hmm. when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And each day, right, you just get a little bit better and a little bit better, or you hope to.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's nice when your leaders tell you that you're falling a little bit short, right? So you pick up the
feedback.
Pace a little bit.
Yeah, feedback is good.
Yeah, positive feedback always. So, you know, really that's been my career. Is the Army has really just taught me to be resilient, do your best, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, mm-hmm. The old adage of, you know, those are tough shoes to fill. Well, you know, you fill your shoes. You don't fill somebody else's shoes.
Right.
And then you just.
I love that.
Literally do the best you can.
That's awesome. That is probably the one quote that I like picked. That's awesome. And that's such a big thing to realize. Oh, my gosh. Even as a younger leader, I've had to be. I'm the same person. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I wish I could be like him. I wish I could be like them or whoever. But at the end of the day. You fill your own shoes. No one else can do it for you. That's fantastic. So did you always decide to be in the military full time for your entire career? I mean, going on, I mean, it's 2025 almost now. So was this a career decision in the making when you were done with all these crazy missions? Or was this like, no, I wanted to do this from day one?
Yeah, great question. So I, like many others, joined to get my college paid for.
Right. Okay.
So that was, you know, that was the motivation behind it. Is, you mm-hmm. know, how am I going to pay for college? That turned into, you know, your second enlistment of, mm-hmm. okay, what do I do? And there was a point in my career, I was, you know, right around the 10 and 11 year mark.
Sure.
That I took a year off. Ironically, I could, you know, I say by the grace of God, I mm-hmm. happened to be going to school out at U of Mary, and I was sitting next to somebody who I knew well, and mm-hmm. and she said, "Murph, what are you up to?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm in the ING right now. I'm, you know, just taking a break." And unfortunately, you know, the preponderance of folks that go into that type of status don't return.
Right, right.
And she said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I'd really like to get into public affairs or public relations because mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm going to school for." And she said, "You know, we've got an enlisted position that's open in our public affairs detachment."
Oh,
you know, so you know,
it just worked out.
It just was pure luck, and I took a tour of you know what they did,
right.
and you know just kind of jumped right back into it at that point. So that was a few years of doing that enlisted,
mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it was like I said, the full time public affairs position was coming open, and I was certainly interested in going down that right. path. And so I put my packet in and took my commission
are.
And was the only lieutenant in the headquarters building for a lot of years. Lieutenant Dan. If I had a nickel for every time I heard it, I would be a very rich man.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
That's actually crazy you say that. So similar experience in my own sense. I was going to go to Minnesota for the Art Institute, or I was going to get a music degree in performance at the University of Mary. And at the time, like, I had a Marine packet filled out, and my grandpa looked at me and said, no, with all the things going on around, you don't want to be in going to Syria or something like that. You should find another option. And that's no diss onto anyone else, right? But somebody then at Allstate Music said, hey, there's an Army band. Holy cow. What? Yeah. Like, I was going to in music for a civilian career, and there's a military option? Had no idea. And then that effectively changed everything. And then, like you said, over time, people, places, timing, right?
Yeah.
And here I am 10 years later, 6 years in the full-time world. It's crazy.
But you know, Sam, you know, aside from trying to grow that sweet mustache, we got to take chances in life.
100%. Right? Yes.
And the fact of the matter is, you took chances.
Yep.
Right? I took chances.
Yes.
There are a lot of us in the organization that take chances. Mm-hmm. And you kind of alluded to it earlier. You know, oh, how would I do at that job? Or I'm not sure I would succeed or whatever. And, you know, again, I've done this Army thing for a long time. And the Army just really instills in you that be confident.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just keep putting a foot forward every day, and you're going to be shocked at what you accomplish.
That's a great caveat. I always use the example, you have to jump off a cliff in order to climb the mountain, which a lot of people are like, wait a second. But I'm on the cliff. Like, I should be at the top of the mountain. Don't think about it too much. Mm-hmm. It's like when going to ask for a military full-time interview, would you rather choose the fork or the spoon?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those prodding.
Bicycle.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, this guy will be great.
Salt or pepper, you know. So that being said, when you say taking chances, every M-Day soldier, when they enlist, they think, okay, I'm going to do a 6-year contract is 6x2, because that's what the Guard offers. And I think there's even a 3-year contract now. But it's a 6x2 contract majority. And they're going to be getting their college paid for. They're going to do what? Well, along their road, they're going to have different things. They may be in the ADA and do a rotation Operation Noble Eagle in Washington, D.C. Or you're an MP company and you're going over to Ghana and working with their police force. There's a lot of things that'll change a person's career over such a, 6 years in the Guard, if you think about it, I think the math, again, no public math here, but 365-ish days, if we think about, like, M day, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year, it really isn't 6 years. It's like a year. For anyone that's an M day, what would you say to them if they don't know what they're doing, but they're enjoying their military service? Like, what are some of the opportunities that we have for an M-Day soldier in the Guard currently?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about full-time opportunities
as we
segue into that, because there are opportunities galore. You talked about it. Listen, from a traditional soldier, right? Mm-hmm. I have been in the ADA, I've been an engineer, I've been a public affairs NCO, not even talking about the opportunities I've had as a commissioned officer. From a full-time perspective, we have roughly about 1,100 full-time positions.
Wow.
So those are federal technicians and AGRs. And it's both the Army and the Air Guard.
Okay.
And the way I explain it to people is you look at the organization like a microcosm of any other larger organization.
Right.
Because that's, you know, 1,000 employees is a lot of folks, not, you know, even to include the part-time or the traditional or dual status guardsmen, which add on, you know, their 2,000, 2,500 for the Army and another 1,000 for the Air. I mean, you think about it, it's 4,000 full-time and part-time employees in this organization. So with that, you need people to do logistics, you need people to do personnel, you need people to do human resource, and I don't want to confuse the two for anybody, but when you think about most of your traditional folks are going to work with their S1 sections, right, their personnel is,
right.
In the human resource side of things, we deal with civilian human resource issues and whatnot. So that's everything from onboarding, benefits, retirements,
right?
You know, for you know, dual status technicians, that's buying your time back from deployments and things like that. So, you know, I when I stepped into this job here a number of months ago, I came home one night and told my wife, I said, there's nothing I've done in the Army that has really prepared me to do civilian human resources work.
I mean, you know,
both the Army and the Air have unions, and I've really have never worked with the unions before.
True.
So the opportunities within the organization are opportunities like you would find in any medium to large size organization. Mm-hmm. And really, you just, your first job likely is not going to be your last job.
True.
And we've talked about it already a little, Sam, right? Take chances and take opportunities. Mm-hmm. Take an opportunity to get into the organization. Mm-hmm. You get a wide-eyed view of really what the organization does and the different sections and departments. Mm-hmm. And much like you did, you kind of gravitated towards public affairs work from, you know, a S1 personnelist side of things, right? And, and so you found that, you know, in your heart. It's like, yeah, this is really where I'd want to go. The unique piece of the guard is I can have one job Monday through Friday and do something completely different, which I do, which you do, right? Mm-hmm. Completely different of sorts on your weekend position.
Right.
So, you know, I encourage those that will listen to the podcast, those that wear the uniform, if your heart is in service, then I think you're really going to enjoy a full-time career and an opportunity. Because you'll have those chances every day to help somebody and serve somebody.
So true. I've met so many people. I mean, from the first job that I had at R&R as a human resources technician to now being in the visual information public affairs realm, that so many people will go and do so many different things and take those chances. If you start out in the little cubicle and are doing paperwork, well, maybe a year or two, you're going to have another opportunity arise that you've been indirectly training for to take you somewhere else, whether that be a unit on a mobilization or whether that be just another MOS in the military, another job. And that to me is one of the most valuable things that I think the military as an organization does very, very well. And that, and I'm not trying to diss on the civilian sector, but like if you apply for a job, it seems like you're stuck there and you're only going to climb that particular job's ladder. But in the military, it's okay. You're in the door. You've got your foot in the door. Okay. Well, what are you good at? And then your supervisors and your just people around you are going to say, well, you should try this opportunity. Try this. And you have, to me, have said, hey, you should take this opportunity. And, you know, you say yes sometimes. Sometimes you say no. You know, those are things that can happen. It's no different than telling an enlisted soldier, hey, you've got the qualities to be an OCS grad or be an officer.
Absolutely.
Take the OCS option.
Yes.
You know.
And listen, I spent 18 years enlisted and loved it.
Yeah.
Right? And there's still a ton of my makeup that feels I'm more enlisted than I am an officer.
Right.
And that's okay. Right? Mm-hmm. All of us are just designed in our own way.
Right.
And you have to look to capitalize on those skills and try and improve the things you feel you're a little deficient on. And I've had mentors tell me, be as universal as you can. And what they mean by that is just keep taking chances, keep building your resume, keep looking for opportunities.
Right.
I've explained to a number of folks that have said, do you think I would really qualify for that position or how do you think I would be, right? Mm-hmm. My response to that is like, you know, we can teach you almost anything in the Army except ambition. And accept will.
Yeah.
Right? So if you show up at work every day thinking, this is my job interview, you know, bully for you. That's fantastic. I can teach you how to fix widgets. I could not necessarily me, but organization can teach you how to do almost anything except that ambition and that will to get up and do your best every day.
Yeah, you got to want it. Now's almost the time to start getting your foot in the door.
Sam, there's opportunities galore.
Yeah.
Right there. And you've got an ever evolving force. And what I mean by that is, you know, you've got retirements and you've got folks that, you know, that are going out the back door. We need folks coming in the front door.
Right.
For us to be successful. Mm-hmm. And again, if you look at it from the scope of, you know, we're like a civilian organization where there are all those capacities where we need that support.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it once, I'll say it again, right? Your first job is not your last job.
Yep.
You know, Sam, I'll use you as an example, right? When you came into troop command and you were there for not really that long when you think of things,
time-wise,
then the next opportunity came up. And I see that time and time again. And I think that's part that is a big part of our success is that we encourage that, right? Listen, you've cut your teeth here and you've done a great job, right? Here's a position that just opened up. I think you'd be very good at.
Right.
And the other piece of it is from a full-time perspective, we kind of saddle right up with your traditional additional education or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to be an equal opportunity leader, if you want to be a whatever, hazmat qualified, unit movement officer qualified or whatever, organizationally, when you're a full-timer, we encourage that, right? Because it brings that benefit right back to the full-time organization. It's a little bit different. And I spent, I spent a lot of time in the civilian world before I came full-time. And, it's explaining to your employer lists, I gotta go away for 2 weeks and then maybe another 2 weeks here. And that's tough and that's challenging.
Yeah.
I know that because I've walked in those shoes for a long time.
Yes.
Then when I came on full time, I realized that my supervisors were encouraging that. No, that's a benefit you'll bring immediately back to the organization. Go get that training.
Right.
We will figure out a way to, make things work for a week or 2 weeks or whatever because the value that you're bringing back. Our jobs are posted on, North Dakota Job Service.
Mm-hmm.
It's posted on the North Dakota National Guard webpage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's likely posted on a lot of bulletin boards.
Yeah.
If anybody reads bulletin boards anymore. so the access to find out what jobs are available is very, very simple.
Right.
And we have vacancies.
And those jobs, they're not necessarily... you had alluded to civilian unions as well. So a lot of our jobs, you can be a uniformed member, whether it be Air or Army, but there are opportunities for civilians too, right? Like, aren't even enlisted.
10-11% of our full-time force is true civilian.
Wow.
Now, they can wear the uniform, but they're hired into a true civilian position.
Right.
Unlike you and I, as a dual status guardsman, right? For us to have our full time job, we got to keep wearing the uniform.
Correct.
Right. So that number sits about 11% right now of our force that is straight on civilian, and that brings a lot of uniqueness to it. Currently in the human resource office, which was unique to me when I got when I came into the position.
Right.
Primarily that entire workforce, sans just a handful of folks, they're all true civilians.
Yeah.
So, but they are experts in what they do, right? Subject matter experts that build that longevity, certainly get to understand the organization. I mean, I don't know if you remember day one of basic training. I certainly don't. It's been a long time. But I, could guess that when I walked in, I didn't know all the military rank structure. I didn't understand how that organization really worked, right? The longer you do it, the more you know
You get,
and it's the same for our civilian force, right? They start to understand the acronyms we use.
Yep.
They start to understand the uniqueness of the organization. And all of that is just, it's just mutually beneficial, and it works really well.
Right. So when we talk about, we talked briefly about from then and now, how have you seen, and obviously you haven't been in the current position director at HRO for all that much time, so you really don't know, but the exact stats, but from your perspective, have you seen that civilian job opportunity increase? Or I don't know, like, was it mainly full-time military at the time, or are we now opening a lot of doors to civilian employees, so et cetera?
Yeah, so they call them Title V employees.
Okay.
So Title V would be straight civilian. You and I are a Title 32 dual status technician, and I don't want to use a bunch of acronyms or whatever.
But,
but the fact of the matter is, I believe, again, from memory, it was maybe 3 to 4 years ago was when the civilians positions opened up in the organization.
Oh, okay.
So it has not been
that
long.
Long.
No, not at all.
Holy cow.
No. That growth from 0 4 years ago to where we are today, again, just about 11% of the full-time force, it has provided a lot of stability in some certain sections. And I'll use human resources as an example. There's a lot to civilian human resources that just is not intuitive.
Oh, yeah.
But to have a civilian workforce that you work side by side with that have done it for more than a hot minute,
mm-hmm.
and understand, you know, some of the nuances of it all,
yes.
to
yep.
a very, very deep degree,
mm-hmm.
Is absolutely invaluable. And organizationally, that's what employees expect. When I mm-hmm. ask a question, I expect to get a professional and, you know, well-researched answer.
Right.
Because right. from an HR perspective, it impacts your benefits,
oh,
it impacts
everything.
Your retirement,
yeah.
right? It impacts the things that will impact your life forever.
Right.
So if you don't understand those things up front,
mm-hmm.
or if you aren't able to reach out to somebody that is really, really good at what they do, and our staff is really, really good,
yeah.
Then, you know, you just end up being behind the eight ball and might lend you to become frustrated,
mm-hmm.
right? And then potentially seeking employment outside the organization, which
right.
is not what we want. We've brought you in here. We've trained you.
Yep.
You know, we think you're doing a great job. So, you know, stick with
Let's
us.
Stick
There's great opportunities.
Yes. And that's, it's interesting to say, interesting that you say that because, you know, when you had talked about a little bit about your deployments and things like that, things will get stressful and that's okay. But stick with it. Like, you'll get there. We'll get through this. Wherever, what time, whatever climate we're in, we'll get through it. But I just need you to stick around. And that will just make you that much more of a person.
Makes you a better friend.
Yeah.
Right?
yeah.
Makes you a better mentor,
mm-hmm.
leader,
mm-hmm.
Whatever you want to say, right? As you've kind of, you know, walked through or forged yourself in that fire of sorts,
mm-hmm.
and you come out on the other side and realize, yeah, you know what? For example, basic training was hard, but I made it, right?
Yeah.
Advanced training, OCS, mm-hmm. what you know, whatever, you know, level of military school you're going through, you emerge on the outside and you feel so good about what you've accomplished.
Yeah.
And then you become that encourager
right.
to others. Like,
and it happens like
do it.
This.
It does.
It just a snap of the finger.
I blink my eyes.
Cow.
3 decades plus have passed.
Jeez.
Yep.
I mean, for Billy being almost a decade now, you know, myself, but it feels like yesterday I was in Fort Jackson sweating my butt off, getting screamed at, and
yep.
now I'm here 10 years later,
yeah.
never thought I would be here. And that's interesting you say that. It's a great correlation to, you know, you're going to go through hard times and all these different, I guess you could say, pillars will come into your play and you'll have to get over them somehow. And then you'll look back on it at the end of the day and you're, holy cow, I did that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, in anybody's career, obviously you're not going to hit every goal that you
mm-hmm.
set out to accomplish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, on purpose. You should set lofty goals to make sure that you are scraping and climbing to try to achieve them.
Mm-hmm.
My goal when I kind of got into the organization traditionally and kind of figured out who's who in the zoo is, I wanted to end as a first sergeant,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That was my whole really goal,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they had the ability to have some influence, still got to work with soldiers every day, hands-on,
right.
you know?
Right.
And I came up just short of that. And now as an officer, I continue through my career to reflect back to that as far as why.
Mm-hmm.
And the why is because I wanted to take care of people,
mm-hmm.
right? I wanted to do good by people, train, mentor,
mm-hmm.
you know, and impart the things that I've learned in my career to that next generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Train two levels down.
Right.
And so now I sit here, you know, as a lieutenant colonel, you know, I've had a chance to be a battalion commander at the RTI and do some just unbelievable, I had some unbelievable opportunities in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if, you know, if it ended all tomorrow, Sam, I would look back thinking, yeah, you know what? I didn't quite meet that goal I met. And I, you know, again, often still reflect back on missing that because, again, you set goals to try to achieve them.
Yeah.
But I look back and think, you know what, I hope in my career that there are folks that think, you know what, I actually learned something from that old man,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I appreciated whatever he passed along.
Well, I'll say this right now. I like the ring of Lieutenant Dan
yeah.
more than I do. For
yeah, I still hear it a lot.
I had
yeah,
to, I had
it's
to
a
poke.
Legacy. Yes.
I had to poke. So... And that's, I'm so glad you say that. Just thinking about all the different things that can happen in one person's life. Sometimes we get stuck on one thing and then you just completely forget about everything that you've done. I've been there where I've literally looked at, I've just reflected back and I'm stuck. oh my gosh, where am I at? What am I supposed to be doing? And all these things are just hitting. But I've recently I've, holy cow, I've done all of these things, and there's a reason for all of these things. And it's cool that you say that, because sometimes we get so stuck up in the now and all the crazy things that life brings us, whether it was from, you know, whether you, I don't know, you know, whether it's social media something or, mm-hmm. you know, you're moving and you don't know what to pack, what to sell. Like, there's so many different things, but then you look back on it and you're like, oh, this is awesome. This is crazy.
But I think most of us that wear the uniform, we're inherent planners.
Yeah.
Probably drive our spouses and, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends crazy, right? Mm-hmm, because, you know, we want a CONOP. We want a plan laid out, right?
You think about it. How does the military work? Well, there's a plan A, and then there's a plan B, and then there's a plan C. And a majority of the time, plan C, B, and A both come off the docket because something else came up, and you have to redirect fire.
And the irony is we're still running through the door.
Exactly. So, you got to push it. There's a goal. You got to hit it.
Sometimes it drives my wife crazy, and on a rare occasion, she's appreciative of a plan. So, and I'm kidding about that, but yeah. So, no, she's a great lady, obviously.
Well, good. Yeah. So, let's look what, over the time, you said 3 decades now, what is one thing that you always look back to for inspiration, mentorship, words of wisdom? I mean, I'm sitting with you and we've been recording now for 36 minutes. And I feel like I've already gained a whole novel worth of knowledge and just experience.
Well, that's pure luck, man. There's a couple culminating points in my career that I can look back on, right? Early on, I sought out mentors.
Yep.
And not just mentors in my, you know, peer group or a level above, right? I sought out some very senior folks in the organization, both on the traditional side and on the full-time side. Mm-hmm. And because as with anything, and a technician career and retirement is no different, you have to manage your own career.
Right, right.
And if you're not willing to manage your own career, and in, you know, on the Army side, we do career management plans, we do, you know, things like that, that help lay out the next 2-3 years of sorts. And if you're not responsible to managing your own career, then it's hard for you to come back and say, yeah, I fell short of this, that, or the other, when, again, you're not willing to, you know, take those chances. Mm-hmm. But I think, honestly, Sam, the best time in my career a few years ago was the latter part of my time as a public affairs officer. Mm-hmm. I got a call from the Department of Army to serve as the public affairs representative for Mr. Clint Romichet. He's a Medal of Honor recipient. And I had done some training with the Department of Army. I brought him to North Dakota to do some training, and we had a very good relationship. And as they were getting ready to announce that that he was going to be awarded the Medal of Honor, they called and said, you know, can you work with Clint and his family to do some public affairs training? Because obviously, as soon as the announcement would hit, they're just overwhelmed with media inquiries, right? It was crazy. So myself and at that time, another gentleman that worked in the public affairs office, Bill Prokopic, we spent a week or 10 days, with Clint and his family and did some public affairs training. And then at that point I thought my mission was done. And, a number of weeks later I got a call, from headquarters Department of the Army saying, do you have your plane ticket to come out to DC for the event? And I was just floored of course, I checked with my boss, be like, hey, what do you think of this? And, as a great, mentor and supervisor would do, is happened to be General Sprinson Attic at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, Murph, this is an opportunity you really can't pass up.
Yeah.
And I absolutely support, you and this effort. And so that time period of being involved in something at that level and being at the White House and then after the event, they had tapped me on the shoulder 2 minutes before we were walking out saying, why don't you step in front of all the cameras and introduce Clint and kind of kick off the press conference. And, I was, wide-eyed and kind of what we talked about earlier. It's like, I don't know how this is going to go. But anyway, stood up to the mic, gave it my best shot. And that was, I've had a lot of fantastic points in my career where I can reflect back to. Again, if it ended tomorrow, I'd look back and think, you know, this was fantastic. And but that is certainly one that sticks out just because of the magnitude of that event and just all that goes into it.
Yeah.
So
the time.
That was something else. Yeah.
That's insane. First off, I mean, oh my gosh. I hate looking at emails. I can only imagine the amount of phone calls and like physical, like, I don't know, that you could say like physical items of letters and wow. That's,
I, you know, in some sense, you know, I would say the second one was, again, during my public affairs time, but, when Mina was flooding and just a tragedy of all that.
Right.
And General Spry walked down to my office one day and he said, "Hey, I think things are turning kind of south in Minot. Why don't you head up there and see if you can support their public affairs effort?" And so I brought a team with me, and you know, we proceeded for a couple of weeks to facilitate you know, public affairs efforts, and that included, you know, calls and whatnot all hours of the day from literally across the globe, especially after they had you know, turned the siren on to evacuate Minot. Yeah. And just that surreal moment. I mean, I can kind of get chills talking about it right now because I can remember, you know, standing there, you hear those sirens go off and you, you know, then fully grasp the magnitude of what has just happened
the
to this
weight.
Community.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, you know, you scan the horizon with hundreds and hundreds of uniforms that are in Minot to help support and try and help build back that community. And, you know, if that doesn't fill your heart with pride to be able to serve your state, help your, you know, fellow North Dakota citizens to try and make things at least 1 or 2% better, then I think then probably something's lost on you, because I mean, that was just a fantastic time in my career, exhausting like none other. I don't think I've ever worked as hard as I have. Those 2 weeks, I mean, it was literally just insane. But you look back now, and as you kind of talked earlier, it's like you snap your fingers, and it's like, hey, I made it out the other side of that, man. I you know, that's a pretty good deal.
Nothing worth going for is ever easy. It's it's always the toughest situation where you just find yourself at the lowest point, or you feel that you're at your lowest, and then coming out on top of it, you're just... that, and that's, again, to caveat to what we had said before, or to kind of reflect back on what was said, is everything that you do will just build you another step and another, you know, you'll become this fortress of just experience, knowledge, and impenetrable when it comes down to any question or any other tower or pillar to come your way. It just makes you that much more durable. And that's one thing that the military has always done very well. And a lot of people give it flack, you know. Friendship is sometimes caused by trauma, you know, but it's so true. If you think about it, they may not be the best of days, but it's Joe Snuffy, to quote Jeanette Ingebretsen, Joe Snuffy, on and all these other different people that will make that the best part of your life.
And it's, you mentioned it, right? It's about a team. There's either somebody trying to hoist you up or push you or whatever it is. And, you know, that's that. In my career and in my experience, that has been the best part of all of this, is the friendships, the teamwork, and boy, when you put a few folks together, just really what you can accomplish. You know, all of us hit that wall where you're like, man, I don't know if I could take another step. And then there's always that guy or that gal that's like, oh yeah, you can take one more
Let's
step.
Keep going.
And then maybe mile whatever, 7 or 10. You're that person where you catch that bit of energy and you're like, all right,
Let's
you
go.
Had me, I got you. Let's go.
Let's go.
And that's, to me, that just epitomizes, you know, kind of what we do every day, right? We're always lifting somebody up. We're always pushing somebody along a little bit to be just a little bit better, even when they don't think so. And you know, so then you just, that's just a little encouragement and they'll get there.
Man. This has been awesome, and I appreciate you so much for being on this podcast. I can't find any other way to have ended this podcast any better. I guess the last thing, I'll just open up the floor to you. Is there anything you would like to say to anyone out in the force in regards to HRO? We'll definitely put some links in the comments for sites to USA Jobs as well as our ND Guard page. But is there any last thing you would like to say? You and I could talk for, oh my gosh, hours and hours. Yeah. But that was such a, what we've talked about in this 44-minute span, I feel like, oh gosh, we could just keep going. But I love it. I love everything about it.
I would say, Sam, to end it, stay the course.
Love it.
Take chances. Seek out mentors. Mm-hmm. Ask questions about your career. And just enjoy the ride, because it's going to go fast.
Yes. All right. Well, you heard it here, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to The Guards Podcast. This was Lieutenant Colonel Murphy. And we will catch you.